This week on RSVMB Update, we discuss the new Orthon Deke site, including relics, environment, music, and a look into Dragonkin therapeutic rituals. The questions raised include what happens when you transfer a lizard brain into a human, and is Anachronia finally complete? This is RSVMB Update, episode 800, recorded Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Flying High with the Dragonkin. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVMB Update. This week, we have the monumental launch of the Orthon Dig Site, the dig site that so many players asked for. That Jagex had to build it, because, you know, there's actually a fun story about this one. About a month or two after Archaeology came out, somebody asked Mod JD in a live stream, are you guys working on the Orthon Dig site? And he said, no, the Orthon Dig site is not in development. And, you know, with the reception that Archaeology received, I think they had to make Orthon, just because of the massive positive reception that this new skill had 6 months. Well, actually 6 months ago at this time, 6 months and I think 2 weeks by now. But that's what we're going to be talking about this week, the Orthon Dig site. To do that, Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
We also have Joe, who was on the podcast from the Book of RS a number of weeks ago with his killer lore documentaries. Well done on those, as always.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And, of course, Zant, one of our longtime contributors and environment artist by trade. He loves Plague RS and loves talking about how beautiful it looks.
Hello.
So,
good to be back.
You guys ready to dive in to this new dig site here?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
You need level 90 archaeology to start. And, you know, I have to say to everybody out there who is waiting for 90 archaeology to start this, it is worth the wait. They say completion of desperate times and desperate measures is not required, but will be helpful with some of the later puzzles. And, you know, this dig site on its own is actually, I think, really special. Because you remember when Anachronia came out last year, Tanis, the biggest complaint was that there's no reason to go there. And, you know, now I think we've actually finally filled this island up. And, you know, it's full and has its place in the game.
I actually had the same thought that was on my short list for article. Subjects.
I think you should go for it.
Is it actually a real continent now with a real space and reason to go there? No, I think you're right with that. I'm not. You can't chalk that all up to this Orthon site, although the Orthon site kind of ties together a lot.
It's the cherry on top.
Yeah, it's the cherry on top that kind of brings these through lines together, you know. So, yeah. Well, we'll get into some of that later.
Because when we got this last year, it was basically just an agility course in Slayer Island.
Yeah. That was hard to navigate.
Yeah, it would have been a perfect setting for the Hunger Games. But more on that later.
Yeah.
I guess that's one way to put it.
Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, you're going to get... There's lots of hazards, and who knows what's going to happen, right? It would have been RuneScape's perfect setting for a reality TV show. But
Wow, that's interesting. They should do that now.
Yeah,
and not make it a reality TV show. Make it some like in-game event or something.
Yeah, and you know, I think I can actually think of a few people I'd like to send there for that. But anyways, you were right, Tanis. That movie definitely had an impact.
Dude, I watched it. The additional three the following day.
Yeah, and for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, we did a movie night with Hunger Games this past weekend, but more on that in the Patreon spot. So so you just start off the Orthon Dig site, you need level 90, and you know this is actually a kind of unconventional dig site compared to all the others, in that it's actually split apart onto various areas of the island. And, you know, one of the things you're probably wondering is, how am I going to get around to this? Because, you know, previously the only real way to get around the island in a shortcut sense was the agility course, but there's actually a new teleportation portal that you can activate with each sub-area, and it will bring you directly to the areas that you need to excavate for Orthyn. And what's interesting about this is that, you know, if you look at Everlight or you look at Warforge, for example, they're all effectively very linear in the same area, but these are spread out across the entire island, and you effectively have four different rooms tucked into different corners of the island that you go to, which I think is an interesting way of doing it, honestly.
Well, you know, and I'm curious to find out what, like, Joe and Zant think about this, because I kind of see two sides to this. Now, I don't have all of the network open. I'm not strong enough yet.
I did that.
but... So for me right now, I think it kind of feels a little disjointed with the different sites like that. But at the same time, I feel that it does pull Anachronia together.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
That's about what I think about it. And to me, it kind of answers the question, what actually is Orthyn? And, you know, what I thought before this update is that Orthyn was kind of just literally Anachronia, like spread all about it. And this kind of solidifies that in a way. And yeah, it does bring the whole place together really well.
Yeah, because and to talk about your disjointed sense on that, and yeah, there it's all spread about. But in terms of when you unlock the different areas, we're looking at archaeology level 90 for the first one, 101 for the second, 106 for the third, and 113 for the fourth. But you can actually get in there before 113, and it is pretty neat on that of how it looks. But to get around, there's the Orthyn teleport devices, and you know, you just complete various little tasks at each one. So, for example, the first one requires 70 divination, gives a chunk of divination XP. The next one requires you to do a research, needs some ancient viz. The third one also needs some research, a mystery complete, and some Orthyn glass. And then the last one results in actually needing a full mystery to be complete in order to go into that dig site. But if you just want to go there, you just need the research associated with it. So when it comes down to that, and you know, some of the little puzzles along the way, it feels linear in that sense. But I think the reason we're saying it feels linear is because, well, from my perspective at least, I'm unlocking these teleport devices within the 48 hours after launch. Whereas if you considered that if Orthyn had launched with archaeology, you would have people who wouldn't even be in there until the second week or so, because it took them that amount of time to get 99 and then progress on to 120 after that. So we're having a bit of a different perspective here on Orthyn because people already have the levels to unlock it. Whereas I think if we were waiting if we were waiting for our levels to level up and this had launched with archaeology, it would feel as though we were perhaps dealing with three different dig sites.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think speaking to the idea of it being disjointed from like a narrative aspect, I think it works perfectly, because as you start reading the stuff that comes out of the dig site, it's this, it needs to be full of areas that has plants and animals, the flora and the fauna. That's really important to the whole island. So I think it's not disjointed. And yeah, as Shane says, as you reach those levels, it all comes together.
Yeah.
And it gives you something to aim for as well. You know, you gotta unlock it so you can get around the island for all its benefits.
Yeah. And go ahead, Dennis.
Well, I wanted to ask Joe then. So like, does you feel like the lore makes it feel, you know, kind of gives it a continuity that if you're spacebarring, you just might not get, type of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Because you know, Anachrona, it just looks at first glance, and when we first arrived before we knew fully, you know, about Orthon, it just looks like this big, and people complained about it, right? It's just this big area that's hard to get around. But, you know, even in the Yak track, the Kerepak track, you examine the fungus and all that stuff, and it all starts to come together that it's all really, really important to the Dragonkin, which is why it's here on this island.
Right. And this is that whole narrative tie-in that last year when we first got that Stormbreaker event to go to Anachronia, this was the beginning of something that was the world out of time, they said. And, you know, it's a shame they never continue that website. But let's move on to what everybody, of course, wants to talk about, and that's the actual excavation sites. The first one being the Crypt of Varanus has excavations in there at levels 90, 96, and 99. You get a number of artifacts and, you know, blown away, both by the soundtrack and the way this thing looks inside. Absolutely amazing, I have to say, on this.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Hard agree.
And the examines. There's examines.
Yes. And, you know, this is something that they said they were going to continue with, and it's so good that they did. Am I just being perhaps a little bit swayed that I think the Crypt of Varanus is the best looking because I have a thing for falling water?
I agree with you. I think it does look the best.
I haven't seen the
crypts as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right. I was just saying the crypts as well.
I haven't seen all four of them in person, but I think the one that is called the Moshko Ritual Site, I think.
Yeah, that's number three.
Yeah, that's the other one that looks pretty nice to me as well, but I've only seen the Crypt of Varanus in person. So, yeah, in my opinion, it's tied between those two right now, but I haven't seen the other ones yet.
Yeah, and there's many details in here inside the Crypt of Varanus in particular. Some of the actual crypts look as though that something came back to life and broke out of it. There's also those yellow wires that we saw in Desperate Measures going to some of the crypts as well. And I think one or two of the crypts also have that Dragonkin script on it too.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I can't translate that. I don't know exactly what it's saying. But
did you do the mystery for the second one?
For the second site?
Yeah, for the ritual site.
No, I haven't done that yet. I'm waiting on the darn RNG on that.
Right.
I got the first.
I mean, getting inside. Translating, no, not the second one, the third one. So translating from what you read in the second one to get into the third one, where you have to do the Dragonkin translation. Did you do that?
Oh, yeah, I did do that one. Yeah.
That's tough. People were saying you basically can't do it in-game. You need to open up the wiki and at least get a transcription of the alphabet.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll talk about that when we get there. And this is one thing I really think we need to push on for when we do the lore deep dive, is that we need to start to have an understanding of what this language means for that. Because, you know, on its own, sure, fine. But it would be nice if we knew coming in on there for all of these. But in terms of mysteries at the Crypt of Varanus, I think there's just the one that is RNG-based, right? In terms of the lore books that you get on that, if I remember correctly.
Well,
the Cryptozoology.
Cryptozoology, yeah.
I've been getting... Oh, that might be for later. I was going to say, I've been getting fragments, potion fragments.
Oh, really? You have?
Yeah.
I've only got one.
I've completed a full one, actually.
Oh my god. Okay, we'll talk.
I've got one piece.
We'll talk about this in the rewards section, because I think we're having some disconnect here of how rare these are.
Yeah. Also, while we're still on the topic of the area itself,
yeah,
I wanted to say, this is this is like the beginning of what I'm think is starting to be like Jagex really getting a handle on making good interiors.
Yeah.
Because it's a classic thing in RuneScape where you've had these interiors that have just had a black backdrop to them, and you can see the ground on top of it and everything still. And even within this one itself, it doesn't have a skybox or anything. But for example, in places like the Heart of Gilinor, where they have a skybox to make it look like there's an actual roof over you, I wish they would start doing things like that with areas like this, where instead of just being fog up in the air, it kind of looks like there's some rocks up there, something that's, you know, a ceiling. But this area itself, you go down into this chamber, the Crypt of Varanus, we're still on that one. Go down to this chamber, and you're so deep below the upper wall that you basically can't even see that most of the time. So it feels like you're really inside this area. And that's something that I feel like RuneScape hasn't ever really captured that well.
Yeah, and that's actually one thing I want to talk about with this one, and it'll become more apparent as we move through it. You definitely feel it in the Crypt of Varanus. But this dig site can either feel really, really tight in based on how you have your camera or viewpoint, or you could pull it all the way back and see this perspective from that door all the way down to the actual excavation sites. It's really quite something.
Yeah, these areas are a lot more, they're a lot more grand than they make themselves out to be.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it.
I wish they would make it so you could go down to the water where the water drops right to the bottom on free cam because you can't.
I tried that, and I think it might be just some aspect of the way they do floors in game. But
I need to say here too, the waterfalls look really good.
Yeah, and you know, typically they've had a bit of an issue with doing waterfalls like that.
These look very in tune with the actual water we have in the game, I think. I think it matches pretty well.
Yeah.
You can see some slight reflection on them, too, if you move the camera around.
You're right.
What was that, sorry?
If you move the camera around near the waterfalls, you can see that they actually do reflect the environment. So they actually get some reflection on them. I know sometimes waterfalls that are in the background, oftentimes they don't have that kind of effect on them, but they're going all out with this stuff nowadays, and it's really good to see.
All right, I'm going to play some music from the Vault of Varanus.
It reminds me of AOD music.
Player will go. What'd you guys make of that?
Incredible.
It's absolutely haunting. Incredible. I love the music with this update so much. This one is definitely my favorite.
I think it just conveys the grandness of the area when you first step in so well.
I do believe this is the same theme they put on the title screen too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it fits perfectly for that.
And, you know, even without archaeology, I mean, it's just such an amazing interior.
Yeah, it really is.
And I feel like that, you know, at this point when we're talking about this here, the artifacts and the XP and the mysteries and whatnot don't really matter. At least in our discussion right now that we're having here on this. So,
you know, back to the music, one thing that scares me a lot is I feel like one day, because the music doesn't really get enough attention. These days it's getting more attention, but it should get a lot more recognition. Mm-hmm. I'm so scared that one day Jagex are just going to say, you know what, let's pull back and maybe not put as many resources into it. And I'm just going to, it's going to kill me.
Well, the music team is one of the smallest teams inside Jagex. For, you know, a long time, it was only three people. It has since expanded to five or six, I believe.
And they still have, like, the veterans from...
Yeah, Ian and Bond. Ian and Bond. It'd be interesting for me to look up and see who exactly the composers were on Vault of Varanus. Because, you know... It all fits in, of course, with the standard design and leitmotifs that you hear within Orthyn on this. We don't know exactly who the composer was at this time, but pretty amazing stuff nonetheless. I'm just going to talk a bit about some of the artifacts that you get from the Vault of Varanus, since we haven't done that yet. You get the... Passaha, which is, I have no idea what the hell this thing is, you know, looking at this.
To me, I thought it was one of those, like, wires. I don't know.
Lasso/whip. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it's actually needed for one of the skilling offhands, believe it or not.
Yeah. Sorry, lasso/leash, not whip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, what could they have used that on?
It's what Varanus used to capture the dinosaurs that he was hunting.
Yeah, and just a reminder here, if you actually want to read about these artifacts, you can go into your archaeology journal, and it will tell you on that. A translation for the word Passaha still eludes us, but it's clear to see that this is some sort of lasso. Given where it was found, it was likely used for the trapping and corralling of dinosaurs, and then also some kind of leash. Next up, you have the ritual bell. Given the dragonkin propensity for long bouts of hibernation, it's theorized that interred kin were left with these bells in case they were wrongly presumed deceased. Waking up from a nap inside of a tube would be quite traumatic. So maybe that's what's happened to these guys in here.
Yeah.
Huh. That's terrifying.
Or maybe Big Game Hunter is going to give us mouth. Da-da-da-da! Use the lasso. Catch him, ride him.
Does that mean I can ride it up to the GE?
Yeah.
Make everyone mad that I have something bigger than a Drake?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The next one is the Kalaya, which comes from the Dragonkin Reliquary excavations in here. We've been unable to determine the meaning of the term Kalaya, though we know that this is what they are called from journals among other grave goods. It's akin to a four-bladed spike or dagger, but it appears to be ceremonial. Then we have the Vazara. We're unsure on the purpose of what these Vazara artifacts are beyond ceremonial. It presents a club-like weapon, and its detailing suggests that it's both indestructible and unstoppable, but what if two Vazara were to clash? Then we have the Death Mask, the Dragonkin Calendar, and Dragonkin Staff. And the Death Mask says that the team are not quite sure what factor determines if a Dragonkin is interred in a coffin or cremated with their ashes stored in urns, and those Interred, however, have these Orgon decorated stone masks placed all over their faces. And of course, Orgon is one of the materials that you can excavate. The Dragon King calendar doesn't appear to correspond with any current or known calendars, which makes sense given Dragon King civilization predates our history. Researchers are trying to interpret it, looking for any doomsday prophecies. And the Dragon King staff, while not a weapon, the ceremonial staff could certainly still be used this one. It appears that even in death, the Dragon King are prepared for a fight. They must have been through a lot as a species and still survive. And that's what you get. Yeah, I don't think you'll be getting it, though. At least not yet. So that's what you get from the Crypt of Varanus. Anything else on Crypt of Varanus before we move on?
No, but I do want to say something about the book. You know, you're reading from the archaeology artifacts section of the book. I think this is the best thing about archaeology that not enough people talk about.
Yeah.
It has gorgeous artwork in there, and that is the essence of the skill. You learn so much about the cultures of these races. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and a fun little fact on this is back when archaeology first came out, we asked the question, what would archaeology be without the collection log?
Yeah.
And the answer is not what it is today. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very important. Very important on that. Moving on. Our next dig site, or I guess, are we calling them excavation sites or dig sites? Because, you know, we call it the
Ortham dig site. Excavation, right?
Yeah, the next excavations occur at the observation outpost, which is on the north end of Anachronia by the Mushroom Patch, which I was actually very pleased to see this because it provides a nice quick teleport to getting to that Mushroom Patch if you don't want to use the teleport totem.
Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
Of course, Shane's excited about it, too.
Mm-hmm. this one only has two excavations in it, level 101 and level 102. This is a very, very macabre site or area, because the two excavation sites are called the autopsy table and the experiment workbench.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And this is the one, Joe, you were talking about the Dragon King pylon in there.
Yeah.
Because you need to use this pylon to access the next area after this. You need to complete the mystery, I guess we're calling it, on that, with that. And you're right. I did need to look up a key on the wiki to that, because the Dragonkin language, I think, at this point, is honestly seems like trial and error. Am I wrong in that, or do you have to tie it back to Desperate Measures?
Yeah, you have to tie it to Desperate Measures, but there is the key that you can open, and you could memorize it, because it's like a set of three consonants is one of the symbols, and each symbol is a set of three consonants. And the one that looks like an A is all vowels. So it's kind of trial and error in the sense that you know, okay, this is either B, C, or D. This is a consonant, and this is either, you know, J, K, or L. And then you have to figure it out. So it probably is, you know, this word.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to be spending a good chunk of your time here, because there are some mysteries in here that are RNG-based. So just keep that in mind, because you're going to need to get lore pages. But, I mean, that's what we've come to expect with archaeology, right? So, anybody have any thoughts on this area? Graphically, sound-wise, artifact-wise?
My favorite soundtrack, this one.
Okay. We'll have a sample of that in just a minute. Some interesting side effects of what you can see on the side of the walls in here. There's a case with the butterflies that you hunt that are on display. There's also some potion flasks on one of the walls as well. There's some piping along the walls. And, you know, I feel like we could go into any one of these areas and, you know, beyond what we get in the mysteries and the research, we could have an entire quest take place in one of these if we really wanted to on that. So.
Oh, wow. I never even thought about that.
Right?
Because, much potential for quests.
Because I think it's in the one after this, but there's actually a door on the side of the room that you can't open. Yeah, it's the one after this. There's a door on the side of the room that you can't open, kind of like in Caridet. So, very well done graphically yet again. And this one's, you know, a room, and I actually want to take this opportunity and point it out that, you know, given the fact that this is a more compact room, this is perhaps one of the closest excavation sites to an archaeology material depositing cart. So it's actually not a bad one to train through. And the unfortunate side effect of this is that only the Crypt of Varanus and this one actually have an archaeology material deposit cart in them. The rest are kind of left to porters.
Oh, really? They don't even have a cart in them?
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm checking if the ritual site has one outside. Does it?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Nope.
Huh. Wow. I guess they're... thought is you'd use the teleport if you're not using
See, that's the thing. I mean, it's a quick teleport back to
but I assume you still have to leave like the little dig site area.
Yeah, you have to leave the room.
Yeah, that's annoying.
And I mean, if it's a choice of if you're going to do that or if you're going to give up your time sprite charge.
Yeah.
So whether or not
is
you
it
use
bad that I've ported every single excavation site up to 106. I've never deposited.
I've basically done the same up to 95. Yeah. I don't bother depositing.
I only use porters if there's no cart in the immediate area.
I'm thinking I probably need to start doing that because I'm using just a ton of porters all the time now.
Yeah, dude, but you can do like me. I'm over here getting energy. It's been a day doing that and you're good to go for another week.
Yeah, I've been doing a day of that each week.
Yeah. That's how it rolls.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. If you make your own porters, it's really not that bad because all it is a diamond gold bar and the energy. So, if you gather the energy, so.
And that's going to be a lot easier after this week, Shane. But more on that later.
Hey, and we can make those diamond necklaces with all the diamonds from Sand we have.
There you go. Okay, we're going to have a listen now to the soundtrack of the Observation Outpost.
Thank you.
know, one thing I really like with all these tracks so far is that they have the choir backing as well.
Yeah.
So why was this your favorite, Joe?
I think the melody is so simple, and it's basically the same melody the whole way through, but it builds on that same melody. I think songs like that, even in the real world, they're just powerful.
Yeah, and it like I said, it definitely conveys a sense of solemn here, because I mean, if you look at the table here, you can see that there were definitely some very gruesome experiments going on both tables, as a matter of fact, with that. So
yeah, I think it's safe to say that nobody was hurt in that room, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why do you say that?
You find out later on. I don't want to ruin the lore dive.
All right, we'll save that for the lore dive then. Zant, any thoughts on the environment in this one?
I haven't gotten a chance to step into this one yet, but from the screenshots I found, it looks pretty good. I wish I'd have explored it myself, because it looks like all the joys and like the little details and little corners and everything.
Yeah. This one isn't as vertical as the other ones, or as the first one rather, but it's still equally as impressive with what they
definitely looks
brought
at least on par with the other Anachronia like dungeon environments.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks great.
And I mean, if this is what the new art direction for RuneScape is going to look like.
Yeah. If this is our baseline, I think we're fine.
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right, let's go through some of the artifacts here. The Dragonkin Scalpel, or the Dragon Scalpel, rather. Compared to the scalpels used by other races, this one looks relatively grim and nasty, almost akin to an implement of torture. But given how hardy Dragonkin are thought to be, it's likely necessary to pierce through their tough hides. Oh, boy. Next one, the protection goggles. These goggles were clearly designed to fit a dragonkin head. We tested their fit on Mr. Mardo, who is the closest model we have. He informed us that the Orgon-tinted glass ever so slightly corrected his long-sightedness. The dragon burner is a piece of scientific equipment that generates a controllable flame for heating flasks, and the little dragon head motif at the top makes it look like it's breathing out fire. An interesting decorative detail not often seen with dragonkin artifacts. And then the Orthon glass flask. This flask, made almost entirely out of Orthon glass, save for a small amount of dragon metal around the neck, has a very distinctive shape. Within some of those discovered, we have been able to take samples of ages-old potions. Just old potions, wouldn't you say?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Keep an extra one of those.
Yeah, as well as the glasses, because that's used in one of the skilling offhands, but we'll talk about the exact material use for those later. All right, I'm going to move us on now to the ritual site. Unless you guys have anything else on the observation outpost that you want to mention?
Nope.
Okay. Now, for the ritual site, this is, for anybody who's done the Lore Hunter Yak Track, this is exactly where Zaros was waiting, right around here. I haven't gone too deep into the lore of this, so I don't know if there's lore ramifications that we need to talk about for this, but it's right outside of where you find the salamander's agility and some of the black butterflies. And kind of interesting that it's right in the area where Zaros was waiting. So I need to dig further into that before providing too much or before jumping to conclusions on what that may or may not mean.
We have an expert right here. You can ask him.
Do you have any thoughts on that yet, Joe?
Not really. I'm still exploring. Still 107, okay. And I think it. I mean 106, but I think it'll. I think it'll expand. That's the thing that I'm loving about the lore is it's it's developing. You know, it's not one big drop. Okay, we'll leave that for 2 years. It's developing month on month.
That is nice. You mean no 10-year finale hanger right now? Oh, okay.
Exactly.
The artifacts inside the ritual site, the Moksha ritual site, are level 106 and 108. Archaeology, you have the meditation pipe, singing bowl, personal totem, the lingam stone, and the master control. The singing bowl, the stone, and the master control are all needed in a mystery that gets you further on into the Zolo city. And, you know, I'll just spice up the direction a bit about that first. We'll actually talk about these artifacts before talking about environment on this one. So, you know, these artifacts, as with all of the other ones that we've been talking about so far, continue to have the amazing graphical detail on them. And, you know, the meditation pipe, first up, the team believed the word meditation to be somewhat euphemistic. Going by analysis on the residues found in examples of these pipes, indeed, one researcher's detailed analysis had them seeing dancing pink dragons for a time.
Sweet.
Gekka the stoner.
I mean, we got hookah pipes, and now we have the meditation pipe. I think I'm trying to tell us something.
I bet you'd like to take a sample from that, eh?
Oh, hey, I mean, you never know. We did get recipes from ancient potions, right? So
you got to appreciate nature.
That's right.
The personal totem is due to the totems some visitors to Anachronia have been discovering. It's speculated that this portable variant contained a small mote of the power that their large cousins contain, and it certainly shares some of their aesthetic designs. And I haven't gone far into this one because I was mainly doing this dig site for environment. I haven't spent too much time here. But is there anything we can do with this one that would boost our own totem powers out of curiosity?
Oh, that's a good question. Because in my inventory, I've stood by the totem. Let's see what happens if I use it.
I'm willing to bet that probably nothing happens.
Ooh, nothing interesting happens, but I'm sure it might have a connection.
Yeah,
in the
it'll
future.
Probably have a use in the future. The singing bowl. These bowls typically contain a striker, which would have been run around the rim of the bowl to create a pleasing vibration. This being the singing aspect, it would predominantly have been used in meditative practices. All right. Then we have the lingam stone, which is a smooth egg-shaped stone that has a carving on it. Though there is still speculation as to what it depicts, the competing theories are that it is either two dragon-hidden hands drawing in cosmic power or two dragon-kid beneath a waterfall. Two very different things here, eh?
Yeah. Looks like a crab.
You're right. It does look like a crab. That's another way of looking at it. And then we have the master control elements of the design suggest this is a similar function to dragonkin effigies, but also blends in elements of the pylons occasionally discovered inside Orthon runes. It appears that this device can be worn on the head. And for anybody who has unlocked the Zolo City, you'll know that something unfortunate had happened to archaeology assistant Alfredo. Which we'll save for the lore deep dive. Actually, no, I'll just say it right here. The mind of the archaeology assistant has been replaced with the mind of a lizard, and his mind has been transferred into a salamander.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we got Bob and the salamander. Watch out.
Yeah. I'm going to do the musical preview on the ritual site right now, because this one I think is also interesting. It's called Inner Consciousness. And I'm sure there's other ones too, but... Is that breathing?
On the pipe, man. They're meditating.
I thought that was one of y'all for a second.
I thought so, too. That's why I had to ask.
I was meditating. No.
I was like, dang, one of y'all really likes this song.
I did like the song. Did like the song.
Different, isn't it? It's really different.
It's so different compared to the other ones.
It's slap. Like
at first it kind of had like a, I felt it had like this real Pink Floyd kind of vibe to it. I'm like, yes, yes, this is good. And it kind of got a little EDM-ish towards the
end. Right? That's kind of what I thought.
But at first, dude, there was a lot of like, I don't know. There's some Pink Floyd influences, I bet. It all makes sense if you.
Oh.
I think I heard what you're talking about.
Thank you.
I'm not an expert, but I know what you're talking about. And yeah, I agree. It's there.
Should I ask what exactly you're talking about?
Yeah, I want to know.
Tanis is probably better at explaining.
Well, I mean, it's just a band, like, you know, I mean, but it's a band from...
Yeah, it just kind of sounds like some of their work.
Yeah.
Like, there's influences in there for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was something... special and specific that you
had. Yeah, I thought so too.
They didn't like come out of nowhere and just put some, I don't know.
No, I mean I think there's a wink and a nod with the artifacts to the era in which that music came out.
I see what you mean.
Yeah,
very Woodstock.
Yeah,
and who even knew it that Dragonkin needed to get high?
Dude, who, why, how would they not? Dude, they had a rough ass life, man. Their world got destroyed, then they got stuck in the abyss. They finally crawl out here and it's full of freaking dinosaurs. And it's like, yeah, dude. They probably could use a cold beer too.
Well, look, from the looks of it, they did, because in the pillows and on the floor, there's goblets like and whatnot that are set up in addition to the pipe. Around the ritual site.
Yeah, man, that's a hard one.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Looking at, you know what? Looking at, I'm at the ritual site right now, and looking at the area around and listening to that music, they really like chilled out here.
They just got comfortable. They just got comfortable because you got all the pillows and you got the pipes, you got the goblets, you got the keg in the background too.
Yeah, now that's my kind of ritual. I can get into that.
but the funny part is that maybe this isn't funny, is that when you engage the site with the human and the lizard, it swapped the brains of the two of them. So I don't know what the hell happened in the middle there, and we'll save this for the Lord Deep Dive, but they must have been enjoying themselves.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know how that... I mean, I don't know. How that happens.
I mean, the middle area looks like a little bit of a rave, to be honest.
I haven't done the mystery. I want to know now.
I haven't either. I've just looked up screenshots.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the funniest things that happened in RuneScape is you have this guy who's eager to help out, and then he gets his brain replaced with a lizard brain.
Is this lizard brain the big boy, or is it a different one?
No, it's a little lizard that you catch outside.
Okay.
So his only interest is wondering what the hell's going on and eating bugs, apparently. The archaeology
right,
system.
Okay.
But so the lizard, but the actual lizard that now has Alfredo's brain in it, 100% conscious and very smart.
Sweet. So we get our own little Geico lizard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. They need to make that a pet.
Oh my gosh.
Please.
But can we talk to that lizard?
Please.
But could we be a pet? Because it's a person. Or it was.
I mean, no, it's a lizard.
But so we're either pro pet adoption or slavery. Either way, you gotta go there.
Scrolling through my pet list, I'm sure there are other humanoids. Or human,
what about that one from fire making? It's like the Burning Man.
Oh my god!
Yeah. The minister.
Oh my god! Okay. All right. So moving on from there, I think we all just had our own trip there.
Yeah, that was a thing.
That was a thing.
The next one, the Zolo City unlocks at 113 archaeology. So I haven't been able to excavate there, but you can get in it, and all you need to do to get in it is complete the Fragmented Memories mystery, which you can complete at 108. And this is the lizard mystery that I was telling you about.
Okay.
Where they swap. And it's got a neat little puzzle in there, too, but we'll save that for the lore deep dive.
Neat little puzzles.
Yeah.
I found no puzzle neat.
I think you'll be okay with this one. All right, so moving on to Zolo City. I'm going to start with the artifacts again. We have the Zolo Hard Hat, which, I mean, once you see inside the city, you'll understand exactly what the term Zolo Hard Hat means. But it says this tiny, presumably mining helmet has odd design elements such as vertical fluting at the rear and what seems to be eye holes towards the front. It appears to be made from reclaimed dragon metal decorated with gold. So, I mean, not too much info there, but it helps. Next one, of course, is the Zolo pickaxe, and this goes along with it because there's actually a gold rock inside the Zolo City. The team can only presume that these small tools were pickaxes used by very small creatures. While there's only one gold rock found in Zolo City, it might have been a relative motherlode to such tiny people.
The lizards.
Exactly.
They gave them human brains and made them mine.
There you go. There you go.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Can they hold a pickaxe?
I bet that's right.
I mean, they can probably teach them to hold a pickaxe. They have a human brain.
Put them in the outpost and give them opposable thumbs. There you go.
So somewhere we might find a group of very smart lizards that...
Yeah, because the whole idea in the ritual site is that it was an ability... They had the ability to transfer consciousness from one... conscious being to something that didn't have a consciousness, so to speak, or just move consciousnesses between them.
Okay.
Then we have the Zolo Shield, and we're talking level 119 here. This one is a shield that has a striking motif on its front, which looks to be a stylized salamander head with its tongue out, or perhaps spitting fire. From the back, it seems to be at least partially constructed from a set of protective goggles. So your lizard idea really isn't too far off the mark there. Then we have a gold dish. And, you know, lots of emphasis on gold in this one. This is at level 120. Dish is a loose term for this contraption, which is predominantly made from gold. It's certainly not for storing fruit in, nor serving food. There appears to be a space for one of these atop the giant golden pyramid in the Zolo city. And the last artifact is the Raksha idol, which also, of course, goes back to the ritual and consciousness transfer. Now, this idol is one that they can call an idol in particular, but given the scale of the surrounding environment, it stands out more of a statue within this model city, and it seems to depict a particularly nasty Rex dinosaur. The team hoped the real one was just as small. And that's the Zolo.
Keep dreaming.
And that's the Zolo City artifacts. I'm going to move on and talk a bit about the graphics here right now, because aside from the first one, I think this is perhaps the second most grand one that you have when you walk in here, because you walk right in to this excavation site, and you step down into the first platforms, and the way I did my video, I did it as if it was first person, and then it opens up this expansive garden with some crypts in it, and then a huge statue at the very end of it that you can potentially climb up, and everything in the middle of it is, of course, adorned with gold. So this is what the Dragonkin had as their cities, or at least part of their cities. And it's a really interesting cultural look in, particularly on this dig site, because it shows, of course, you know, we knew the Dragonkin as these nasty creatures, but this just takes one further step to providing that culture and normalizing them, I feel, on that. So,
I think all these dig sites has kind of been showing how badass the Dragonkin were.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know. I mean, they're kind of starting to really grow on me. I mean, I've always been kind of a fan. They're kind of like my second favorite behind the elves, but I don't know, man. I'm beginning to, like, the more we understand them, the more we understand why they're so, like, horrible at first when we first contact them.
Yeah. And, I mean, the ramifications with the Elder Gods, too, can't be understated with this. Because, remember, they were, of course, put under that curse. And then you imagine this thriving culture slowly dwindling to the point where they're put under that curse. And, you know, it's the classic tale of a fallen empire.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to be working towards exposing as we move on through all this lore stuff. But, I mean, Zan, I should have sent you these samples that I took beforehand. But you know that golden texture we have on the money tree? That's all over in here.
Oh yeah, I was about to say, like, literally all I have to say about this environment is like four words: look at that metal. Like, it's, I've seen people go into this area on Twitch so far. Like, I haven't seen it myself, but yeah, it looks nice.
It is modern RuneScape, and I mean, is anybody complaining about this? About these graphics?
Huh? Someone complaining?
No, I'm just wondering, has anybody heard any complaints about this?
Like, almost none at all, actually.
What could you complain about?
Yeah, like, honestly.
I don't understand.
I mean, like, sure, I could sit here and nitpick and find probably 50 things with each of these that I don't like. But that's getting really nitpicky. And
what I'm basically wondering is, has anybody heard anybody say that they're upset with these because they don't fit the graphical styles of RS?
They definitely fit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
I think this has given the Dragonkin more of an identity. Like, I've been trying to figure that out as we've been going through this, like, because we've seen some glimpses of Dragonkin, you know, before Orthyn and before Desperate Measures, and I'm thinking, you know, is it finally being fleshed out, or was that style kind of always there? They're just making it, you know, they're just kind of like perfecting it?
I feel like it's kind of a little of both. Okay. Like, I don't know. I feel like all the new graphics they've been doing recently. I guess this is a better way to phrase it. I feel like Dragonkin are like one of the races in this game that we're actually getting to see like their environments, their homeland, in like this nice, really HD, really good graphics view.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like that's,
yeah, that's a really good point.
Like, we haven't seen hardly any races in this game to that degree before, to the point where we can understand like their type of architecture and the style of just like everything that they. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but you get what I'm. You get the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, other than, I mean, I think Griff might be a good.
Yeah, that's another good example. But other than, I'm trying to think of what other ones there would be. But we just like, have such a rich forest of even just the styles of architecture that they use in their cities. Yeah, like, that's something we're going to see front and foremost right now.
And we didn't need to put out.
That's been half illustrated, you
and
know?
We didn't need to have a huge city like Priff in order to get it done.
Yeah.
I'm going to preview the music from Inside Zolo City now. This one is called Outer Conscious. So once again, we have a music that's completely different in tone from the first two and different from the third. And I think it goes really well with the site and, you know, capping it off that this was at one point, the city was once the pinnacle of all things Dragonkin inside here. And go ahead.
I was going to say that one feels very like Lord of the Ring-ish to me. I feel like Liv Tyler's going to beckon me forward and can see like sad images of Dragonkin like leaving their city or something. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Zant, Joe, any thoughts?
I don't know. I kind of agree with Taz. It feels very melancholic for that reason. I guess that's a way to put it.
Yeah.
But also, I think I'm hearing a literal melody that came from the old title screen song that was up when Desperate Measures was released.
Oh, interesting.
That specific track. I think I'm hearing that same melody in here. I could be wrong. There's a lot of those within the Anachronia and archaeology updates that kind of sound slightly similar.
Yeah.
But that one sounded really convincing to me.
Yeah. And Tanis, I want to tell you something poetic on this. The Zolo City excavation site is right under those bent bars on that round table where you guys predicted archaeology.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's cool. Huh? That's cool.
By the Lanikeus Slayer Master area. And the story, backstory for anybody wondering on this is we had a monthly roundtable. I think it was probably in like August or July of last year. And everybody was predicting that archaeology would be a skill just based on how things were. And, you know, they said, hey, go look at this Lanikea thing on southern tip of Anachronia. And there's these bent bars. And that's definitely got to be something with Dragonkin. And it's definitely got to be something with the archaeology skill. Well, 14 months later, the highest level dig site in all of the archaeology skill is right there.
Wow. Right there. That's something I don't think I would have ever noticed. I don't think I've even been to that part of Anachronia yet.
How did you guys get that so right back then?
That's crazy.
I can't take too much of a credit on that. I mean, that was some people we have in our skilling monthly competition sometimes. Unknown Raptoid, PK Mage, Jingles Jr., and Brew were that all. I think we were all at that meeting.
But that's the Orthon dig site, the excavation sites. We are pushing the 1 hour mark, so what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to go through some of the rewards. We've already talked about some of these, but you know, we have them now in the flesh, so we can talk about exactly what they are. We'll start with the relics. Evil Bob's Cat's Paw, which we talked about last week, is the relic that allows you to catch fish and have them already cooked, which I think is actually a really interesting thing for Iron Men characters. And talking with Iron Men this week, they really appreciate that one.
You know, I want to know, will this kill the waterfall?
Huh.
Because it's more efficient to do two skills at once.
Huh.
But it might be faster for just fishing XP. But it might have took a bite out of it real hard. Just throw that out there, Shane. I know you're a big fan.
Yeah. I mean it is an interesting conversation to have, and I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see on that. But anything that dethrones the waterfall is good.
Shane, I'll have you know that I'm nearing 99 fishing, and I have not once touched the waterfall.
Oh, right on. Right on. Right on.
Well, he didn't have to. He has fish flingers.
Even though I did, like, most of up to 92 prior to 2013.
Yeah, well, see, he had barbarian fishing.
So I had a terrible training method.
Yeah, see, he did it, you know.
Yeah.
Did it the hard way.
To get this relic, you offer Bob the Cat a death mask.
That's cute.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just cute.
And then you take it to the relic area, and then you, of course, do need your cat speak amulet for that to work.
Where are we supposed to track down Bob at?
See? He's not that hard to find.
Right.
That's the point. You gotta find him.
Soma is, of course, the relic that, when used, increases your archaeology precision by 20%, but prevents you from gaining soil while excavating. To do this, you need the Orthon glass flask. You add a piece of dragon metal to it, one of the new materials. And then after this, you go to the location of the Kindra council meeting, which, of course, was in Desperate Measures. You click on the flask near the pool to add water to it. And then after that, you combine it with a clean Arbok and then add Grana to it, which, of course, comes from the 120 farming add-on that happened last year, then finally pair some sweet honeycomb with it. So this is actually like making a potion, I guess, in a way, and then it becomes a relic for this.
I think the one thing I'm appreciating about these relics so far is there's several of these that make you go to like important locations to have to put these together.
Yeah, like this, absolutely. For
example, that's really cool. It's like you have to go reassemble the thing fully instead of just finding something from some archaeology collection.
And the thing with this now is you can literally point to any section of Anachronia on the map, and it's got significance to it.
Yeah, that's really neat. That's something that I kind of thought that was going to become a thing in due time when Anachronia came out, because it just seemed so many of those locations, they seemed so well thought out. Like, they couldn't just plop this down with all the assets they had just to put a location here.
Yeah.
Like, and these are meaningful locations.
And that's why we needed Orthyn.
That's finally becoming unearthed. Ha. Unearthed.
That's a new one.
And,
yeah, right.
And finally, the Caladanda relic. To get this one, you just complete Dragonkin 3 collection with Sharrigan. And that gives you the Death Note's power that will note all your bones.
Want.
Yes. Yes. And so,
is that one really as hyped up, and are people really as excited about that as they seem to be? I don't know. I just don't understand why that's so sought after.
Just a good moneymaker, really, I guess. If you go to, like, you know, camp something that drops ashes and you get them all noticed.
So yeah. Does it work with Bone Crusher and Demon Horn Necklace?
No, those will take priority.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, I could see why that's... Yeah.
So it works with the ash or bone picker-upper. So it'll pick up and know everything.
Okay.
I understand. I have to say, it's going to be really good if you're making incense sticks.
That was the implication I was looking at. It should lower those prices a little bit.
I don't want them to lower those.
I mean, as much as they can, they're not going to go... I mean, the herb is the herb, right? That's the expensive part, but...
Yeah. You can increase your monolith power by 150 by completing the Mysterious City mystery, which is the very, very, very last mystery here in Orthyn. It needs 120 archaeology to complete.
Oof.
Let's see. What's next? Let's talk about the potions, because you mentioned these earlier, Zen, that you completed one of them.
Yeah.
I only got one piece for the summoning renewal. One section of the four.
Yeah,
Tannis,
I got all
how are
four.
You on these? How are you on your potion recipes, Tannis?
Oh, I got one. I got the archaeology and then two fragments of that. Two fragments of the archaeology potion.
Okay, so you got two. I got one. Zant has completed an entire one. How long did it take you, Zant, to complete that? And which one did you complete?
So it was the archaeology potion, and it wasn't long. It was from...
And I think that's at the first dig site, right?
Yeah, the level 90 spot.
Yeah.
And I got that within the experience from level 93 to 95.
Huh.
What? That doesn't make sense to me.
And also, it sold for 35 million.
Really?
Yeah. I've been hearing that day one, some of the other ones, the more sought after ones, were selling like upwards of 150.
Oh my God. That
I know.
I think he got some really good RNG on that.
It seemed like
a couple others in my clan were having some good luck with that. Like, we seemed to think that the drop rates were way better than they are, because apparently a lot of people were having some very bad luck with them.
Yeah, I thought it. I mean, I didn't realize it was rare, because I probably got those two pieces within an hour and a half.
What? Yeah.
My first two pieces happened within 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I spent like 8 hours at the various dig sites this week, and I've only
That's
got one.
Crazy. I want to know the rates on these now.
Yeah. It's shocking.
I'd be really interested to see the rates on these now.
I was at the first set. And granted, I didn't do much of the level 90 or 96 spot, but I did a ton of the Dragonkin coffin to get my lore books. And I only got one piece of the summoning one. And I was probably there for 2-3 hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Jeez.
Huh. You know what I think?
I moved from 96. I just stayed there when I landed.
In the like the RNG drop rate code, I bet they added a plus instead of a minus when it comes to your level giving you a higher chance. Because our levels are higher, and they got more than us, Shane.
Interesting. What level are you?
106.
Okay, I'm 111 now. I was 110 when I was doing it.
I am 95. But I did have a friend who was 120 who was... He's completed the full one already as well. And he had two at the time that I had three. But I did, you know, it took him quite a bit longer than me to get the fourth beast.
Interesting.
Yeah. Debunks the theory.
I really want to see the rates for these now.
Yeah, just to talk about where they come from, the archaeology potion comes from the Varanosaur remains and the Dragonkin reliquary at the Varanus area. The summoning renewal potion comes from the Dragon King coffin at, once again, the Varanus area. Or the autopsy table, which is at level 101. The holy aggrover load. I can see we're still having problems with this. Comes from the experiment workbench and Agra remains, which is 102 or 106.
Last potion you'll ever need.
You're right.
Until you want an Elder Holy Overload aggro overload style.
That's a gumbo.
Power Burst of Opportunity comes from the level 108 site, or 113, which is Zolo City, or the Moksha area. And then the Spirit Attraction Potions, that's at 109 and 120, with the Zolo Remains and Sorthan Debris excavations.
Yeah, I feel like that's weak, too.
So, let me get this straight. These recipes, each specific potion's recipe comes from a different area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, are they... this is... Okay, so this is...
And there's some overlap.
This is leading me to believe that these are different rates for each one, maybe? Like, maybe that's why I have the one first, because it's the archaeology potion.
Yeah, and that's where I've been, too.
Yeah.
That's where, and I haven't been able to leave, right? So
right.
So maybe y'all going for the, you know, the higher level potion recipes, maybe those are a little bit rarer.
Yeah, because I'm doing collections and I'm out.
Yeah, that's the same potion, thing that I took that is, as well.
That is the lowest herbal level to make, I think, right? It's in the 70s. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, and see, that's the difference between you two versus Joe and myself, is that we're doing the collections and then we're moving on.
Yeah, I'm adventuring through this dig site like as I go. Like, I just unlocked it essentially a week before it came out.
Yeah, like, I am the most reluctant collection person there is. Like I'm finally doing just enough to get my professorship because I need the material cash places now, the material box. So I have no choice but to do some of those now. But yeah, I'm much more, like, I'd rather just grind an area if I can.
All about those tetric compasses.
Yeah, that too. And we already talked about what they do last week, but I think most of the names on those are fairly self-explanatory, except for the Power Burst of Opportunity, which doubles the effect of Rock Attunities and time Sprites for 10 seconds. And Spirit
That's
Attraction
so weak, man.
Makes the Seren Spears, Divine Blessings, Chronicle Fragments, Elder Chronicles, Fire Spirits, Divine Fire Spirits, Forge Phoenixes, and Divine Forge Phoenixes and Divine Carpet Dust automatically be consumed. Yeah, those last two are pretty weak, aren't they?
So weak. And so does... Is it that the last potion, the spirit potion, that keeps it so that you don't have to click on your Seren spirits? I thought that was the offhand.
That's
I thought that was the artificer.
No.
That's crazy for it to be so high level.
To make this potion, you need an enhanced luck potion and a time-worn tincture, which you can buy from the archaeology shop for 100 kronotes.
So are these potions tradable?
Yes.
Good question.
Okay, okay, that's...
Except for the Holy Agrover load.
Oh, I was going to say, wait a minute, is it?
I said yes, except for the Holy Agrover
load. Attraction and archaeology potion. I was going to say, Spirit Attraction, if that's that high of a level and it's not tradable, that's silly.
But the Spirit Attraction also needs an enhanced luck potion, which needs a luck potion and onyx bolt tips.
Are you kidding me?
And the luck potion, and the luck potion needs crushed dragonstone.
Really?
You drinking dragonstones?
And onyx.
So Shane. Okay. All right. Was there a survey that was sent out to the PBM community? Like, hey guys, what do we need to prop up with your drops? And they're like, hey man, we really could use some help with our onyx dust. They're like, okay, that's going in the potion. Is that how that worked?
And dragonstone.
Yeah.
Seems a little weird, but okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the Spirit Attraction potion, it doesn't sound great because it only lasts, 5 minutes?
6 minutes.
But remember, 6 minutes. You can put it in the, what's it called, from Invention, the reservoir.
That's true.
So you could use it for 20 minutes.
And it just
AFK.
Enables 100% AFK.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's funny that I'm ragging on that potion, but when I thought that was something that the Art of... Fisher
Artificer's measuring out.
Yeah, I thought that's what I thought. See, I had those two mixed up, and I was like, "Oh, well, I might get that. I mean, that might be okay."
No.
And now I'm like, "Eh, I don't know. Not that good."
Ingredients on the Power Burst of Opportunity: primal extract, dinosaur claws, phasmatite, and third age iron.
Phasmatite,
spirit or the ore?
The ore. Tier 70 ore.
Well,
that's very interesting.
Makes it relevant.
I guess
I like that. I like them bringing, you know, all these lesser known ingredients into high end gameplay. I like that.
We know the Holy Agrover load already.
They could have added another like tertiary for these, but instead you can just, you know, make something else relevant again.
Yeah. Speaking of making things relevant, furthermore, summoning renewal is a spirit weed potion and tomb shrooms.
Spirit weed.
Mm-hmm.
That's ouchy.
Yeah, spirit that is ouchy.
Pretty high, isn't it?
Yep.
How much?
Ouchy that I sold all my tomb shrooms and I had lots and lots of those.
Yep. And the archaeology potion is Evanto in any soil. 5 of any soil.
Make herbs great again.
There you go.
Dude, they're always great, though. It's not Shane.
Oh, they really are. It's true. They really are.
Oh, yeah.
I got that itch. I haven't done a herb run yet today.
I haven't done one in like a week. It's been bad.
I haven't done one in like 6 months.
Wow, Shane.
Herb runs.
And you've been on a podcast with Shane.
I know, but...
And you haven't done herb runs?
Well, I got mad when I got killed in the wildy. I haven't farmed since.
You know what happens when I get killed in the wilderness? It's happened once or twice. I go after that person and kill them. Last year when this happened once, I went after the guy and I killed him twice over.
Dude, that episode was my favorite, like, Shane character development.
Shane
was so good.
Oh, he would have tortured him if he could have.
Where did the PK you at the bloodweed patch?
Yeah.
Came back.
It was the wilderness herb patch, not the bloodweed patch.
That is the bloodweed patch.
Oh, okay, I just call it the wilderness herb patch.
Yeah. It used to be only for bloodweed, remember?
Yeah,
when they changed it.
Yeah, they did, and that was like...
They did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think... When did wilderness achievement... Wait, when did that patch come out?
With the wilderness achievements a long time ago.
So it was with wilderness achievements.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then that was when I wasn't playing for a while, so that's why I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right. I'm just going to quickly go over the two skilling offhands. We already talked about what they did last week, and we'll see if they catch on. But the Orth and Furnace Core requires four Dragon Burners, which are the artifacts you extract, four Draconic Energy, two Curved Masterwork Plates, 10 Vital Sparks, 10 Magic Logs, 100 Extra Fine Sand, which was brought in with the Blessed Flask last year, 100 Orichalcite Stone Spirits, 100 Dracolith Stone Spirits, 200 Terramin Incense Sticks, and 500 Swamp Tar.
We feel like they make just stone spirits worth something.
Yeah.
We will. We'll put them in.
They look at Gravs and say, which item hasn't. Yeah.
Please.
Which item hasn't had activity for a while.
But yeah, I mean, hey, here's more use for your glorious bars in the masterwork process.
That I am happy about, right? Okay. Yeah. So like I like the using the metal and stuff like that. It's just weird that I think the addition of stone spirits is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because you could have just done the ore. It's just a weird use of stone spirits. Mm-hmm. Like,
mm-hmm.
Or is it just me, or is like, I don't know.
Well,
like
people have been saying since day one that stone spirits need more of a use.
Yeah.
But their use is to get ore, and if you're using them in place of ore, then they're just freaking ore. Take them out.
Right.
Well, nobody them.
Well, I mean, you have to use them if you want to be fully AFK mining now. You have to use that in the Juju potion.
So do people actually, like, buy stone spirits to go mining?
I buy them for my Yak Track tasks.
Yeah, I had to for Yak Track. Other than that, no, I wouldn't, but I did have to.
I just
that.
Use them.
I've only get them in PVM. The ones I get from random things.
Yeah.
As for the Artificer's Measure, this one requires 99 crafting to make. Needs one Passaha, one Dragon Scalpel, one Orthanglass Flask, one Protected Goggles, one Magic Stone, which of course is the construction item, one Upgraded Gem Bag, 10 Mystic Cloth, which of course is used to craft the blue Mystic equipment, 10 Blessed Molten Glass, which is part of that process that you use to make the Blessed Flask that came out last year, which needs Blessed Sand and Crystal Flex Sandstone and regular sandstone. And of course, with that, you need to go extra fine sand and sandstone and whatnot. So it's more of a processing thing more than anything. One Glorious Silthril Chain and one Onyx.
There's your construction rework with your magic stone.
Yeah, right. I was just thinking, I wonder if you can merch that, right? I mean, not anymore, obviously, but I bet you could have on day one.
Yeah, and you know what we're seeing in here is we're seeing more use of the items from last year's Blessed Flask, and I think that's probably because the Blessed Flask didn't take off. So they're giving other use to these items.
Mm-hmm.
I finished mine last week, actually.
I never even bothered picking one.
No, not really.
Yeah, exactly.
So these don't have, even though they have like masterwork pieces in them, there's not some huge crafting process for these at all, is there?
No, you just make them.
That's what I figured.
And, I mean, along with that, there's not a huge, I don't know, I don't think there's a huge use case either.
And from the looks of it, there isn't something rare you have to like obtain to get these either. You can kind of just make them whenever you get the archaeology level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I just want to say that the best part about this is that they're skilling offhands, hopefully augmentable in the future, and people have been saying we need more items to be made with skilling for gears, and here we have it.
Yeah.
So I think even if they're not necessarily going to be the most popular things out there, I think they're a net win.
Oh, no, it's a net win. I just feel like they're a little underwhelming for what we were wanting. Like, I don't think it's bad. I think it's a great concept. It's movement in the right direction. But it's kind of like when you get an awesome quest and then the reward at the end, you're just like, eh. Kind of where I'm at with these.
Yeah, I would have liked them to have done something a bit more unique, not just like buffing already existing things. I mean, the Orthon Furnace. No, I mean, yeah, all of them are just buffs.
Yeah, I mean, like the harp. Like who uses that a lot anymore? Like,
yeah.
I mean, who uses that for crafting XP? You know, I mean, like, yeah, right. We all have to do it for our dust or whatever. But like, who
and
does
by
that
the time
for
you,
XP?
And by the time you know are at this level, you're going to be making these. You're going to have your crystal hatch. You're going to have your crystal matic.
Oh, all of
you're
going
to have all your crystal tools that you need. So, but I mean,
does anyone else think the artificer's measure just looks ugly?
I can agree with that, but mostly just because I'm not a fan of things that are overly busy.
Yeah.
But I think that's what they're going for.
Well, I mean, when you're cobbling in the leash and the scalpel and a flask and goggles together.
Yeah. Like, what else are you going to do with it?
It's like my pediatrician told my cousin one time, two St. Bernards ain't going to make a poodle. True story.
Okay. True
story.
Wow.
What the freak? All right. Well, let's move on.
I do think, like, it does look like they were going for something really busy and crazy looking.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a skilling exactly offhand. Like, it has to be. So
yeah, I think it looks good. Like, from a more objective standpoint, I think it looks good, but personally it's not my taste.
It looks heavy.
Yeah. And you just hold that all the time.
And anyways, one final thing on Orthon. There's of course the roar of Osseous buff that whenever the skeleton at base camp reaches 100% progress, just like the pylon, you'll get a buff to 25% more XP for activities on Anachronia, including all hunter and big game hunter, archaeology, excavation, and the agility course, as well as a 10% buff to the drop rates from big game hunter, slayer, agility course codices, and archaeology materials. And, of course, just like with the pylon, you can stock up your fragments so that if you give 100 fragments at a time, you'll get 51k XP, 1,000 fragments, 516k, and 10,000 fragments, 5.1 million XP. And each fragment north of 100 that you give will give 1% charge.
Yeah, you know, I really hate that we can't put these up, though.
Can't bank them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you either just have to destroy it or it just stays there forever, and I hate that.
I think they just want people to turn them in, is what it is. Like, they don't want people just instinctually stockpiling them like they will everything else.
Yeah.
Because let's be real here. Like, it's just going to turn into something else that ends up at everyone's bank if it's not. You just have to turn in.
But otherwise, you have to really be locked into a pretty lengthy archaeology session to get any benefit whatsoever, because you have to build up your fragments, then you got to turn them in, then you're getting the benefit. You know what I mean? So, like, you're going to be locked into a pretty lengthy session.
Definitely for those longer grinds, I think is the point.
All right. Well, to help out with those longer grinds, the archaeology XP embargo is over.
Yay, now my longer grinds are actually shorter grinds.
Which means you can put bonus XP on the skill, including using Vic the Trader and lamps, tears of Gothics, butterflies, practically anything you can imagine with that.
Oh, keep talking, Shane.
you know, double XP weekend won't boost restoration rates, but bonus XP that you put on the skill will boost your restoration rates with that.
It's a little shocking to me. Personally, I think we actually talked about this before, right?
Yeah, it was pre-show that we talked about it. And, you know, I think having it, you know, go haywire for, you know, the 48 hours during double XP live probably would have been too far. But I think with limited amounts of bonus XP, it's probably fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm at with that.
I'm still a little bit shocked that they went this route with it, though. It seemed like they were going to do something a little different with
it. They could have done invention, which would have been 1.5 times, but then that's breaking down the whole elite skill versus standard skill barrier.
Right.
But I did think that was where we were headed with that. So, but this works, I think. I mean, I think this precision trade-off, I mean, I think that works. It gives you something if you weren't, like, say you don't have anything real big to train anyway, like me this time. Like, I'm not going for herb lore or anything big. It gives me a little something, you know, to where at least I'll be getting my artifacts quicker and stuff like that. So.
You won't get your artifacts cool. quicker. You'll just get the XP quicker from them.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I thought that's what precision does.
Oh, right. Now that's for double XP live. We'll talk about that in a minute. One thing also with this is that they are running a Dig Site 12 Treasure Hunter promo where you'll include items such as the Restored Artifact Replicator, which will double a restored artifact. The Dwarven Archaeology Tool, which... I believe boost your precision at the expense of getting materials or gives you extra materials and fixate recharge tokens.
Okay. Cool.
And
well, I don't know, Shane. Can you think of anybody that might use that?
I know lots of people.
Who would want that?
I know lots of people who would use that in skilling contests, but. Oh. But there's one big caveat with this, and I gotta say this for anybody who isn't 99 yet and isn't Guildmaster yet. Just know that if you put bonus XP on archaeology or you use these tools, you're going to need to excavate double the amount of artifacts for your collections because – you know, you're going to effectively have the amount of artifacts you need to get to 99, which means you're still going to need to excavate all those going past 99 if you want to get Guildmaster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's fine. I mean, I personally have been going back to fill my collections, and it's been pretty fast. Like,
I find the process of doing that really fulfilling. It's kind of just fun to go complete the ones you have left over.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dwarven Excavator gives you 150% progress boost towards artifacts, but no materials, or double materials, but no artifacts.
Great for caches.
Yeah. Can you use them with a cache, though?
Yeah, I tried it.
Oh, and it works?
That's great.
Yeah. Really? I don't see the point of doing it, because it's just like a Soma relic if you do it the other way.
Right.
Just boosting your precision.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like the, what's it called? That Dwarven Chain Axe, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's the archaeology version of that. I'm personally abstaining from using any bonus XP in archaeology. I'm going to get 120 the natural way.
The natural way?
Yeah.
Well, what's more natural than just letting the game happen, man? You know.
But I will say that I am looking for fixate tokens in Treasure Hunter this week.
Well, there you go.
Are you going to buy keys?
No, hell no.
See, I might do that now because I really actually needed money, but bonds are going to be shit right now, so I'm going to have to, like, I have to do keys. I don't know. I have shitty luck, though, man. Like, really, really bad Treasure Hunter luck. Really bad. And so,
same.
I hate spending money on it because my luck is just.
I won 50 mil off Treasure Hunter last week.
I know, and you probably got off free spins knowing you.
I did.
Of course you did.
I had these two friends who are also partners, mind you. They both, one of them got 200 mil from one of those Umbral chests from Twitch Prime. And the other one, he got 6 times one of the, like, rainbow override tokens from that event. Wow. It sold for, like, 40 mil each.
Money.
And that guy is, like, 2 months new to this game. Like, he's been playing RuneScape for about 2 months.
You gotta be kidding. He's, like, set up for, like...
His first 99?
Yeah.
He got it? Wow. It's prayer. So he has an untrimmed.
I like his style. All right.
Oh, that's perfect. But anyways, if you, of course, want to talk about XP and whatnot. Double XP Live is returning November 6th, and we know how it's going to work for archaeology now. So throughout the entire period when you're excavating, base precision will be doubled, so you'll get double the projects per hour from excavation. XP from excavations and screening activities is going to be doubled, and players will not receive double XP from tomes, research, mysteries, pylons, or restoring artifacts.
Okay.
I think that's
so
fair.
Double, oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair. Yeah. I really didn't expect it to be any different. Like I said, I thought it would take an invention model. So, no, I think that's fair. Are you ready for another double XP live, Shane?
Yeah, I'll be doing archaeology this time.
All right.
Maybe I'll push for 120, because I have this cape sitting here in my room with me that I'm not able to wear yet.
Oh, so using the double XP live event doesn't count for your purist approach to archaeology, I see.
No. No, it doesn't.
Interesting. Does seem like an unfair advantage, but
doesn't seem too pure.
Speaking of which, Shane, can I give everyone a PSA here?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to give a PSA out there, because you know, with Double XP Live and new Treasure Hunter promotions, you can imagine what the air is going to be flooded with. And I just want people out there to know, you play this game how you want to play this game. Don't let nobody tell you how to play this game. Somebody might have, I don't know, 16, 18, 20 hours a day because they ain't got shit going on. Some people might have to work their butts off and get an hour at night. And if they want to buy some XP or some bonus XP, let me rephrase that, because I am a fan of bonus, not as much on lamps. But if they want to do that, that's their choice. Don't let nobody shame you for any of that crap, because I ain't having it no more. No one's telling me how to play this game. I play this game. This is my game. No one's telling me
how to
play.
Slow clap. Well said.
I agree, Tannis. All right, let's talk a bit about, we're going to move on to tech news, but first I got to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters. For this episode, we're going to talk about the Hunger Games, but this week I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Christian S., Danny W., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, Jason S., Joe M., John P., Keski, a new arrival, welcome, Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Ricky A., Samantha R., Soupfinder, Stabeev, the Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us and enabling us here to do what we do at RSBNB Update. We do so much fun stuff with this, and hopefully it's a nice added benefit for the Patreon members who can subscribe for as little as $1 a month. You get a special mention in our show notes, early access to them. You help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. You get to vote in the monthly bit poll. You get to come to the roundtables. You get to read Inside Update. And you get to come to movie night, which we did this past weekend, which was The Hunger Games. And that was a movie that I really enjoyed.
I couldn't predict. I would have never thought that Shane would have been really into The Hunger Games. Yeah, of course you are. You would like to, if you watch the rest of the movie, Shane.
I have not yet.
You've got to watch the rest of the movies, because it gets even, like I'm telling you, the stuff that you like, because it gets really interesting. There's a lot of deep political theory if you want to take that kind of approach to it.
He's going to love it.
It's fun. It's fun.
I'm a bit bummed I missed out on this movie night, actually, because I love The Hunger Games.
Dude,
series.
And I never, I didn't even realize that was what we were watching until, a day or two before. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah, he said The Hunger Games. I'm like, I had read all the books, but I'd never, seen any movies, but I'm...
Wow.
I like Jennifer Lawrence, right? I wanted to see that.
I have only seen the movies, but I haven't read the books. The movies were my first exposure to it, and now I'm interested in the books.
Dude, you gotta read the books. The, what's his name? Haymith? So much more about him. Such an interesting... Dude, just a cool dude.
Yeah, you got them on audiobook at some point soon.
Yeah, man. They actually have a prequel now, Songbirds and Snakes.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, I've just started reading that. It's all about President Snow.
So oh, we may have just decided what I'm going to start reading here this week. I've been reading a new audiobook.
Well,
there you go.
There you have it. This is what comes from RSBNB Movie Night, and you get access to this for as little as $1 a month. We also have a VIP tier, $3 a month, where you get a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, which you'll want this week for our music showcase, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week, including access to the clips that we use to make the clip show, in addition to everything else. And, you know, you can find out more about this at patreon.com/RSBNB. The monthly bit, which we are doing this month, is going to be for the agility rework. Sirion wrote an article about the agility skill and what a potential rework would be, so we're going to do that as our monthly bit. It had over 60% of the vote, so that's going to be a fun one to do. We'll talk about agility with that. We have Inside Update, which this month was preparing for the Mod Warden interview, a little bit of a behind the scenes on the production of that. We'll be doing a roundtable early in November, and of course we just had movie night. But of course, should we reach that $200 a month tier, we'll be putting out a line of RSBNB merchandise that could include t-shirts, mugs, stickers, and other things. And should we ever reach the mystical $500 a month tier, Tanis and myself will subject ourselves to some pain with our taste buds.
Much pain.
Yeah. Much pain. So if this at all sounds interesting to you, just check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Things are getting hot in the U.S., and not for the reason people may be thinking. The U.S. government has sued Google for alleged anti-competitive what? Search behaviors.
Did you say Walmart?
I said wildfires.
You said Walmart.
Not too.
Wait, what? Sorry, continue, Shane.
Yeah, sorry, Shane.
Yeah, so this week, this is going to be a lawsuit that is the biggest antitrust case that the U.S. government has pursued since Microsoft. And the allegations are is that Google has stifled the competition to maintain a powerful position in its marketplace for online search. And this is backed up by 11 states, including Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, South Carolina, and Texas, who are all joining the suit. Fun little exercise there for those who want to read between the lines there on that. But it alleges that Google pays billions of dollars a year to device manufacturers like Apple, LG, and Samsung, amongst others, and allows for the Google search to be the default search engine on their devices. And other browser developers like Mozilla and Opera use Google as their default search engine, and in many cases prohibit them dealing with Google's counterparts on this. And they say, as a result, Google effectively owns or controls the search distribution channels for accounting for roughly 80% of general search queries in the United States. And I have a question for you guys here on this. Have you guys tried to use anything else? Have you tried to use Bing? Have you tried to use DuckDuckGo?
Yes, actually. I use StartPage as my search engine.
Okay. And how does that work for you?
It works pretty well for most things, but when I'm looking, you know, when I'm doing things for my job, I'm looking for like art references and stuff, I usually have to go to Google Images.
Yeah. And my perspective is that Google is simply the best when it comes to the search that they offer. And, you know, this is saying that if you have an iPhone or an LG phone, as some of the names that were mentioned, is that you are locked into that Google first search experience. But the reality is, of course, you can change it. Really easily in any of these devices that were mentioned. You can change it. It's just the default on that. And, you know, I think the only thing I can see coming from this is that when you first open Safari for the first time, when you launch an iPhone or you update iOS, it's going to ask you, do you want Google to be the search? And that's what I see coming from this. Because, you know, to say that Google is a search monopoly is wrong. There are other options out there. But I think if the U.S. government really wanted to have a rock-tight case on this, they would go for the network effect result and saying that, you know, you can use a different search engine, but Google just owns so much data out there and has a command over all this data that you're not going to be able to get a good search experience otherwise. And I think that would have been more successful rather than going for the fact that, hey, this is default on all these devices and Google and companies pay Google for this. Because in reality, you just go into the settings of any browser, any iPhone, and you can change that.
Well, I mean, they may have picked the wrong thing to go after, but you kind of got to understand too, like, in this country, having a monopoly. So the definition of antitrust and the way it's been enforced has completely changed since the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It no longer matters if you have a monopoly. Apparently, yeah. We're cool with that. But if it's damaging, well,
exactly.
It must be, or they wouldn't even do. These lawsuits don't come to the U.S. U.S. lets business do whatever they want. So there has to be something to it if they're being drug in for it.
Yeah, and this is a lawsuit
that just doesn't happen.
That's going to span multiple administrations, preferably. I don't know what I'm trying to say there. I'm looking for a word, but it's not coming to my head. In all likelihood, it's going to span multiple administrations, and we're looking for something that's going to, you know, take 5+ years to resolve on this here. So, I don't know how successful they're going to be on this and whether or not Google can get out of it by making some changes in the interim on this and what kind of changes these would have to say on this. But the fact remains is that the whole – and this is what people who are in Congress who are going to be dealing with this lawsuit probably don't understand is that what Google is based upon all of the data that they have harvested. And if you take that data away, that's what will take their relevance away. That's what will take their monopoly away. You're not going to do it by this.
Right. And that, I think, that's the danger in this, right? I think that everyone knows – I think people want big tech to be clamped down on. And I'm throwing like Google, Facebook, Twitter. Like
Amazon.
People want – Amazon. People want a clamp down on that, right? But we have, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but when the majority of the people make your laws are in their 80s and can't program a DVD player with the correct time, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how are you supposed to make relevant legislation when you don't know how anything works?
Yeah. And dare I say, also when you have that much corporate money also flowing around Congress.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll just, of course, keep our eye on this one. This one's going to last a long, long time. All right. Moving on. Nokia has been selected by NASA, and you're going to have to check your ears when you hear this, but Nokia has been selected by NASA to build the first ever cellular network on the moon.
Ah, God forbid I get one that works on Earth.
Nokia is the company that made the brick phones that you could throw at a wall.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Survive.
Good old 3310.
Clearly, so, that's the company you want making internet for the moon, right?
It'll be there forever. I mean.
So they will be building and deploying, as they say, the first ultra-compact, low-power, and space-hardened end-to-end LTE solution on the lunar surface in late 2022. They're partnering with a company called Intuitive Machines for this mission to integrate this groundbreaking network into their lunar lander and deliver it to the lunar surface. The network will self-configure upon deployment and establish the first LTE communication system on the moon.
Oh, no. They're going to mine the moon. They're going to mine it. That's what this is about. Why the hell else would you need a network like that up there? This is so they can drive...
Well, the reason that they want a network there is so that when you have the landing craft or potentially a base on the ground, they'll be able to talk to the orbiting satellites.
That seems a little bit like putting the cart before the horse, doesn't it?
No.
We don't have there's no base there. There's no
slotted to happen in the late 2020s.
Is it more likely that they could have figured out a just a remote-controlled drone-type vehicle that can mine?
I think we're entering tinfoil hat territory here.
Well, I have to. I mean, I'm not allowed. I don't put my tinfoil hat when it comes to normal things people put their tinfoil hats on. So I'll keep mine with the moon.
All right. And you know. What they say, the chief technology officer of Nokia and Nokia Bell Labs says that leveraging our rich and successful history in space technology from pioneering satellite communication to discovering the cosmic microwave background radiation produced by the Big Bang, this will be the first ever cellular network on the moon. Providing reliable, resilient, and high-capacity communications network will be the key to supporting sustainable human presences on the lunar surface.
And I find this weird, though. Isn't it weird?
I mean, I never thought something like this would be happening, but we got one further with this. Microsoft is launching something called Azure Space, which, for anybody who doesn't know, Azure is their cloud-based infrastructure that effectively provides cloud computing services, cloud storage, and lets businesses work in the cloud, so to speak, at a high level. And they're going to be launching something called Azure Space. And the idea behind this is that they have the ambition to make space connectivity and computing increasingly attainable across industries, including agriculture, energy, telecommunications, and government.
This is... So, I know people are going to make fun of it, but I, you know, and like I'm kind of being lighthearted here, but we have had a lot of useful technologies come out of this kind of thing that sounded outrageous at first. You know, I don't. I think the only reason is there's just so much mistrust. And everybody were like,
"Well, they are part." Microsoft is partnering.
Oh my goodness.
Microsoft is partnering with SpaceX Starlink to provide high speed, low latency satellite broadband for this. And it'll communicate with data centers on the ground, Earth observation satellites, SATCOM satellites. And this is Microsoft's foray into space. And when you combine this with what was happening in our moon story, this is effectively going to be enabling one step further so that our technologies that we use here can also be applied to the modern space programs that we see from SpaceX and the like.
Well, this looks like they're setting the way for human habitation.
Exactly.
In some way. Which
that's kind of the direction they're going.
Yeah, which I hope is for science and not because we need a life raft. Because, you know, I mean, that's my only thing.
Yeah. But two very fun stories on this. And, you know, I read these. And in particular, the Nokia cell network on the moon. You'd think that would be an April Fool's story. But no, it's actually 100% real. So.
Well, that's probably where all those Nokias went, right? Like, probably just all sitting there in moon dust or whatever. You know they can't be destroyed.
All right. And our last piece of tech news. You might not have heard of them before, but a video streaming service by the name of Quibi is shutting down. You guys ever hear of Quibi?
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, a little something here and there.
How about you, Zent? No, okay, fine. But Quibi was a short streaming service, meaning that most of the content you'd find on Quibi would be under 10 minutes or less. And
I did have Reno 911 again.
Okay.
That was the only good thing about Quibi.
The one that I enjoyed watching on there was The Fugitive. It was a kind of a episodic remake of the Fugitive movies from the 1990s and the 1950s, I think. Following on that, and that was a series that had 14 episodes in it. Each one was 8 minutes long, and you know, you could basically just sit down and watch it in an entire sitting, and it actually felt like a show, even though it was in 8 minutes. And the idea that they wanted to do with Quibi was to just create short form storytelling that could be consumed in, you know, a very short period of time if you had it. And they're effectively saying that, you know, it's not going to work. They weren't getting the money that they needed to on this, and you know, they said that they're unsure if it was because it was something that could have been taken up by another streaming service, because it's just video streaming when you think about it, or because of the time where they landed, of course, during the COVID times. But you know, you'd think that in this time people would be consuming more video. So I don't know if it's the second, probably more of the first on this one. But
I think it's just a bad concept. Like, it doesn't work, because look, if you're going to watch something for that short of a time, it's like a YouTube video or something like that. But that's not how we watch TV. That's not how we watch shows. Like,
yeah, you want to sit down and watch the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I did when I watched The Fugitive. I watched it in two sittings, you know, just split it over two, right?
Yeah, all that's going to do is just piss somebody off.
But I mean, it was an interesting streaming service, and this is, I think, goes to say that, you know, there's many of these quick little services like this here that pop up and then die every so often. And interesting bit about this one, who was behind this was the former CEO of eBay, Meg Whitman.
Oh, and they had tons and tons of Hollywood money behind it.
Yeah, because the production quality was, you know, AAA up there. It was.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Part of me goes, how many people could have ate because of that? How many, you know what I mean? Like, that's so much money, man.
Yeah, I mean, what if you did this on Netflix or something instead, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like a real waste of resources.
Yeah, but they're gone now.
They are gone. It went up in smoke. They literally set fire to, like, $2 billion, right? They just, I mean, could you imagine?
Wow. Yeah, that's the kind of money that flows around in Silicon Valley.
And just burn it. Just burn it. Light on fire.
All right, let's wrap this one up. So let's start with the achievements. I forget who was starting us off. I think it was you, Tanis.
I think I am starting us
off
here. And we're going to start with Doc Hawk with 99 Strength on October 21st. Doc Hawk again with 99 Archaeology on October 20th. Evil Spook with 99 Archaeology October 20th. And we have Feel My Pokes with 120 Archaeology on October 19th.
Excuse you, Tanis.
Sorry about that. Don't me too me.
All right. Next.
We have Quest Our Ship with 99 Archaeology on the 19th. CQ Sethron with 99 Archaeology on the 18th. We had Kebab Thief with 120 Herblore and 120 Farming on the 18th as well. And CO Aces with 99 Woodcutting on the 18th.
All right.
And then after that, it is, let me just check I'm in the right place here. It's Zerdones with 99 Mining on October 18th. Doc Hawk again, 99 Attack on the 17th of October. Duro, D-R-R-O, 99 Herblore, October 17th. And Kebab Thief again with 120 Archaeology on the 17th of October.
Nicely done. Then we have Isk with 120 Constitution on the 16th. Arendelle 20 with 99 Construction on the 15th. Continuing on the 15th, we have Isthmus with 120 Farming. Wolfotopia got 99 Agility. And wrapping us all up, we got Xanthan Gum with 99 Smithing on the 15th. And we also have Poitato.
One that I missed.
One that Tanis missed with 99 Runecrafting on October 19th. Well done, everyone.
Good job, guys.
Great.
All
Purple
right.
Wave.
Pick of the week time. What do you got for us, Zant?
All right, so my pick of the week for this week is something that I feel like most people probably, you know, in one way or another know exists at least. But with RuneScape coming to Steam recently, Steam Remote Play is actually an amazing feature for us to have. And it's something I feel like a lot of people sleep on nowadays. So if you don't know what this is kind of like Steam's answer to cloud gaming. And essentially the way this works is if you have the Steam Link app on a smartphone or Steam on two different PCs, you can essentially have a game run on one device and you can be playing it on another device. Now, the reason I bring this up for our pick of the week this week with RuneScape on Steam is that this has made this a lot easier for RuneScape, because if you wanted to do this before, what you had to do is you had to add RuneScape to your Steam library just as like a different game, you know, just like a non-Steam game. And doing so, it gets a little buggy sometimes with remote play from what I've experienced. But now that RuneScape is supported on Steam, it's actually in the Steam library, this works flawlessly. And it's fantastic, and there's so many nice little things you can do with it. And I thought I'd kind of just share my little scenario with you guys that I use this for, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So basically, my scenario with like my gaming setup right now is I have, of course, you know, a desktop PC, gaming PC I built myself, and I don't own like a laptop or anything like that. The next smallest device I have is a phone, but I do have a Microsoft Surface. Now, Microsoft Surfaces, they're pretty okay devices. They've got nice screens. It's a touch screen, so you can use it like a tablet. But on the GPU side of things, it's not the best. So running a game like RuneScape on it doesn't work that well. It's pretty potato-like, and it runs really badly. So actually, nowadays, when I'm playing RuneScape on my Surface, I have it running on my PC almost 100% of the time, like my big gaming PC, but it's casting it through my network to the Surface. So I have it essentially using the Surface as like a little dummy PC, and it's just sending the video signal to it. And if you have fast enough internet, this can run with incredibly low latency and really good frame rates and almost undiscernible from just gaming on a regular computer.
And
even if there is a little bit of latency, you know, it's RuneScape. You can live with it for the most part.
I just want to jump in that there's also iPad, iPhone, and Apple TV apps.
Yeah. And, yeah, I was starting to get into that at the beginning, but I completely forgot about that part of it. I don't really use the apps at all, but that's a whole other part of this. That's absolutely amazing. If you have an Apple TV, we were trying to figure this out with Chromecast earlier, but we didn't get an answer on if that works or not. But if you have an Apple TV, there's a Steam Link app for it where you can actually cache straight to that, just through your network. So yeah, this is a fantastic way to just run RuneScape on a specific computer, play on a different or some other device. And for those of y'all who are on iOS right now, don't have the beta, this is kind of a way to play RuneScape on mobile. Like, you can do
it. Except you're going to have the desktop UI. So there's just that one caveat, of course.
And also the control system it has for, you know, playing games on mobile is a little strange, but it has a ton of ways you can customize.
And you can use your keyboard and mouse, right? On your Surface?
Yes. Yeah, so the Surface, it essentially just runs like a Windows computer. It's got full Windows on and everything. So, but my point is, when you... well, here, let me say it like this. It's really seamless the way it works between... individual Windows computers in the Steam library when you have the game open on another computer. And if you open your Steam client in another computer, there'll just be a stream button right there instead of a play button. Well, there'll be both. And you can just start it up and it'll just display the game as it was on your other computer in just its own separate window.
Yeah, and this is something, of course, people pay for with you know, the Microsoft streaming service, for example. Whereas if you have a Steam library and a gaming computer elsewhere and you just want to play it on a, like you said, an older laptop, this is the way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, and surprisingly, it's a better experience playing RuneScape on my Surface doing this than it is just running on the Surface.
Yeah, because that Surface has an integrated GPU that's probably a few years old by this point. So,
yeah, taking into consideration the latency through the network and everything, it's still better.
Yeah, you know, I never thought of this for RS when it came out on Steam, but just as a bit of a use case on this, I have the Steam Link app on my phone, and before Rocket League was put onto the Epic Store, I actually was able to play a bit of Rocket League on my phone streaming from my computer with this. So it was enough for Rocket League.
Yeah.
How did you control that on your phone, Shane?
virtual thumbsticks appear.
Yeah, it has a little controller thing you can set up on your screen, and it's quite customizable too. Like, you can move the buttons around and change what each of them does.
Really?
It has some really nice capabilities with it. I haven't messed with it too much yet, but I've seen ways that people have changed, like, for example, the virtual D-pad to being WASD so you can move the RuneScape camera.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quite a nice little feature, and I feel like one of the things you can do with this that a lot of people don't really think about with it is if you have the game streaming from one device to another, you can control it from either of them. So if you, for example, like in my situation, if I have my Microsoft Surface over in the kitchen and I'm cooking dinner and skilling on it, and then I have 10 minutes because I have to let something simmer for 10 minutes and I want to hop over to the computer, I don't have to log out or anything. It's just there. It's just the same instance I was in before. And you can hop back and forth seamlessly.
Nice.
And this is the same hardware that Earth did on the as pick of the week on the show a long time ago. That was, you know, like a $5 purchase because they were getting rid of them, actual hardware. But then they just moved to the app format. But I think it's good to talk about it again.
Yeah, it's just insanely useful, RuneScape. And I figured y'all should know about it. Like, even, gosh, if you're even just like sitting on the toilet at some point and you realize you had something going AFK on your computer and you want to sit there a little more, you can just pull it up on your phone and just click again.
There you go.
You know, just things like that. It's so useful to just have if you're on the same network and you just have to be away from the computer for a bit. Like, it's just great when you're on one of those really long grinds and you have to step out for a second and you just can't click on the main computer again.
Say, like, you have a small child or a baby and it's crying and you gotta go rock or something, but you're playing a game, so take the Steam Link with you and you rock and you still get the skill.
And, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you, there are times when I'm playing RuneScape Mobile that I'd honestly prefer using this app just because it doesn't log you out of the game like 5 seconds after you go into the background.
Yeah, like, that's something they said they were gonna work on a long time ago, and I guess they haven't yet for the mobile apps about what happens when you background RS. So
yeah, that's a little rougher. I don't know, doing like a skilling grind, you want to check Twitter for a second.
Yeah. All right. Well, then, what have we been up to? Let's start with you this week, Tanis.
Just about finished off Yak Track. We're on task 50. Ooh. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. And then, of course, I played a little bit in Orthen, and I just happened to be 96, so like I landed there, and just that's pretty much where I have been working on. I am going to work on some collections tonight though, because I'm only an associate. I'm not even a professor yet, so I need to do that,
right?
Because I need the because we got new materials with this. I'm pretty sure I'm out of spots in my material bank, so I need that extra upgrade.
All right. How about you, Joe?
I mean, are there other things to do in Archaeologyscape?
That's what I've been doing. All right, fair enough.
I mean, some Reapers here and there just to get them Hydrixes.
All right, sounds good. Zant?
Oh, it's been all over the place this past week, so I finished Yak Track like end of last week. I got to 50 and finished that all.
Good.
But since then, I was doing a bit of archaeology until Orthen came out. But when Orthen came out, I discovered I didn't have that material upgrade, like the material storage upgrade. And when I went to deposit the new materials, it wouldn't let me. And I didn't have any Chronotes. So I had to get 65K Chronotes to buy that.
Boy, that's a climb.
So yeah, I did some Tetra Compass farming right when Orthen came out and got the Chronotes for that. But yeah, other than that, I just checked out some of the new excavations, and I think I got about like 15 of each of the new artifacts from that first spot and that full potion recipe, like I said earlier. Other than that, I'm starting to really, really solidify finishing up my Max Cape. I'm getting very close.
Oh, there you go.
Archaeology is now 95, so I'm 95 plus now, and I think I have 6 skills left, and they're all 97 plus, except like 2.
There you go, get it, Sam.
Yeah. Right now I'm just doing some mining. And actually, I want to mention this really interesting thing I just learned about mining today.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually like slightly better to mine on legacy mode. If you want to use a strength buff from a dragon battle axe.
What?
If you know the mining rework,
factors
into how well you mine. And
because you have to start with 100% adrenaline because it's your special attack on legacy.
It's just a little thing I learned on the wiki today. But if you switch to legacy mode, you equip the battle axe, just use a special attack every 5 minutes, and you keep your strength level up all the way.
So what if you overload while you're mine? Is that a thing?
Yeah, that works. It's just I don't want to use overload, so dragon battle axe.
That is very, very good information. Do you know like the percentage that strength affects it when it's boosted?
I have no clue how that actually
factors. Oh, the dragon battle axe. I used to know this.
It's very minimal, Joe. It's for like efficiency scape. I mean, really.
Yeah.
When I read that on the wiki, I had to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you had to do it. Like, just getting to use that special attack.
It's free. Why not? You know, I mean.
And see, the special part is since you actually switched to legacy to do the special attack, you get to click that old bar that used to be there.
The only problem is then people might see that you're in legacy, but other than that,
and you look like a weirdo when you run around.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. But yeah, of course, in addition to Orthyn for me, it's been a bit of Yak Track. I just did Task 42 with Clues, and I'm very close to finishing Task 43, which is the mining cave fissure Animica for me rather than soil. Then after that, it's on to the last Lore Hunter task. Then, you know, rounding that out, I think it's going to be pretty much skips all the way through to Task 49 or 50, depending on how I feel with that, just because there's so many to do on there. So.
Yeah, some of them are real expensive, too. Like, them herb lords, when, man, they're so expensive.
Yeah.
They get pretty rough at the end. Like, those last, like, 10. I think I used 2 skips on 47, 48.
Yeah.
Or 48, 49.
Yeah.
I may have bought a bond.
Yeah. 49 is a cooking or fishing one.
Fishing, because I did that one. Yeah.
And, you know, too bad it's not cook or fish, because then we could test the new relic power. Mm-hmm. But I think that's enough jibber jabber on this. We'll be back next week with Halloween update. Going to be a themed Halloween update week with a new Halloween hub, amongst other things. So that should be some good fun to experience. So with that being said, thanks so much, everybody, for being here. And listeners, definitely, you want to subscribe to the podcast, visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitchers, practically anything. Oh, and we're on YouTube, too. You can watch video versions of the show there if you want at youtube.com/RSBNB. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. If you want to hang out with us, we're in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. See you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Later, guys.
See ya.